I hissed. I don't think it was pretty kissing. When it was over, I felt like I had been beaten. Dazed, angry, still itching. He went into the humid crowd to get a beer and didn't come back. I stood there staring at the boxers in the painting for I don't know how long, until Scott asked if I was hungry, and I said, starving. We streamed through the door of the Szechuan place in Lower Midtown. I looked for a clock on the wall and luckily couldn't find one. Nothing to bear down on the plastic tablecloths, nothing to remind me that this night would end. The restaurant was fairly full, a mixed crowd for so late in the night, some of them looking respectable, some of them looking like us, used up and nervy. None of the diners met each other's eyes, following a law of anonymity built into brightly lit late-night places. Yes, we were starving. Scott waved the menus away, and we got the waiter's attention. He proceeded to order an obscene amount of food off the real menu, which wasn't printed. $2 beers that tasted like barely fermented, yeasty water. We salivated. There was no coursing. In 10 minutes, plates started pounding the spinning tray at the center of the table, and we fought among ourselves. Conk in a hallucinatory Szechuan oil, a nest of cold sesame noodles, a wild red stew that Scott called Mapo Tofu cold tripe. Just eat it, Scott said, and I did. Crackling duck, dry sautéed green beans, skinny molten eggplants, cucumbers and scallion oil. We sweat, we breathed harder, our eyes ran. More napkins. The sauces ran. More rice. I touched my lips, numb and electrified. My stomach bloated out. A hard alien ball. I thought about throwing up so that I could eat another round. What would your last meal be? I asked suddenly. That was a night when I thought it would be all right if my life ended. A really long omakase, like at least 34 courses. I want Yasuda to cook them himself. He puts the soy sauce on with a paintbrush. Salmon pastrami from Russ and Daughters. A ton of bagels, like 3 bagels. In-N-Out double-double. I'm thinking about a Barolo, something really ripe and dirty like from the 80s. Shack burger and a milkshake. My mom's was veal scallopini and a Diet Coke. Nonna's bolognese. It takes 8 hours. She makes the pappardelle by hand. A roast chicken. I would eat the entire thing by hand. And I guess a DRC. When else would I taste that kind of burgundy? Blinis, caviar, and creme fraiche. Done and done. Some impossible champagne. Krug. Or a culty one like the Salas, drunk out of the bottle. Toast, I said when my turn came. I tried to think of something more glamorous, but toast was the truth. I expected to be mocked. My suburbanness, my stupidity, my blankness. What on top? Peanut butter. The raw kind you get from the health food stores. I salted myself. My clumsiness, my dullness. Instead, they all nodded. They treated my toast reverentially, which was exactly how I thought of it when I made it in the morning. I ate it standing up in the narrow kitchen, which had one pan, paper plates, and a toaster. A small window at the end where I would scan the buildings and watch pigeons on telephone wires. Sometimes I had 2 pieces. Sometimes I ate it naked, leaning up against the window. I'm going to throw up. We all agreed. Nightcap? We all agreed. The bill was nothing and the table was destroyed. We left a pile of cash on the spinning tray and rolled ourselves into the ample night. 6. Jake acted like nothing had happened, so I acted like nothing had happened harder. One evening, we were alone in the glass and cardboard labyrinth of the wine cellar. I could hear him moving behind a stack of boxes higher than my head. I heard an unconcerned grunt. His knife tore into the tape. Scrape of cardboard on cement. Taps of glass on glass. How easy it would be to say, "Hi." To say, "Hi, do you remember me?" To say, "Can you help me find the Brico Menzoni?" To say, "Oh, geez, this place is a mess." To say, "Kiss me again like that right now." Footsteps above us loosening dust from the ceiling. I stopped doing everything and listened to him. He left carrying 6 bottles of wine in his hands, ducking at the low door. "Beware of sediment," I would have said, if he had looked at me. I woke in the mornings, inwardly hysterical at the possibility of seeing him. I took great pleasure in subduing it. I practiced composure. He was teaching me a previously unknown patience. It was about him, but it was also not him. I longed for satiation, but was terrified of it. I wanted to live in this queasy moment of fantasy for as long as possible. My body was agitated and possessed, but I found the Brico. I broke down the case. I held it in my body, the precarious balance between the quotidian and the technicolor madness. "Amateur night!" Ariel yelled. Park Bar was filled with lumpy women strapped into flammable dresses, grown men in faded face paint. A pair of vampire fangs in an empty glass with lime rinds. A gold-chained, clown-shoed pimp sat in a corner. Around him, all the usual tarnished whores. Will, our own Peter Parker, had morphed into Spider-Man. He asked me to cover his Halloween shift, saying that it was his favorite holiday, and I thought he was being sarcastic. Not only had I not participated in Halloween as a child, I found adults who clung to it especially odd. But he owned a full costume and had been drinking with his friends Batman, Robin, and Wolverine since the early afternoon. He crouched on a bar stool and shot webbing at me, ignorant of how the red fabric clung to his beer belly. Vivian was indecent. I had spent many nights appraising her with Ariel, who was critical by default, but also smitten. Sometimes I forgot Vivian was like me, a person, perhaps soulful, ambitious, or something. Tonight she was tit soup. That's what she called it. She overflowed everywhere, the waistband of her fishnets cutting into her hips above little black shorts. "What are you, sweet pea?" she asked over the bar. "I'm inoffensive," I yelled back. She didn't hear me, but pretended like she did, and said, "Cool." "This is kind of sad, no?" But Ariel wasn't paying attention to me either. She threw a cocktail cherry at Vivian, who was mid-conversation with a knight and princess. She caught it and popped it in her mouth and winked at Ariel. "Cunt!" Ariel yelled and laughed. Vivian laid out tequila shots and a bowl of candy corn on the bar. As soon as I took my shot, my stomach gurgled. It had been hours since I had eaten. I was doomed. "Total amateur night," I said, chewing a slimy handful of candy corn. "Is someone getting a bag or what?" "I think Spidey has plenty." Will was talking to Scott and the kitchen guys in the corner, wringing his hands. We all had our tics when we were high. Will wrung his hands. Ariel blinked rapidly. And I said, "No, wait," over and over again. They mimicked me all the time. "No, wait, guys." and I always sounded like the slow child when they did it. "Nice costume," said Scott. "Are you a teenage boy?" "In your dreams, Scott." I tapped Will on the shoulder. "Willie, babe, do treats for me."
"Trick or treat," he yelled,
and slid his arm over my shoulder. He followed me, babbling, into the bathroom line. "What are you saying?" I flipped on the lights and locked the door. It smelled like shit. God, someone destroyed this place. Will was sweating, his face greenish against his red suit. His eyes chased light around the bathroom. He looked frightening. "Sit down, babe," I said, putting him on the toilet.
"You never watched that movie."
"I'm getting to it." I held my hand out, and he started wringing his hands.
"You're too busy now."
"I'm not, Will. I'm getting to it. Are you going to share or what?"
"I'm a sharer," he said. "I have 5 brothers and sisters."
He reached into his sock, and his head fell into the sink.
"Ouch."
I grabbed his forehead and straightened him up. "I know. You have 5 brothers and sisters, and you are right in the middle. You hold it all together." I kissed him on the forehead and took the bag.
"Most men lead lives of quiet desperation."
I looked at the bag. It was nearly empty. Okay, Thoreau. You're out."
"You should watch that movie."
"Did you do this all yourself?"
"Nah, I'm a generous guy."
"That's true, darling. No one would argue with that. I'm going to finish this." I took out my compact. There was just enough for a serious line. I looked at myself in the mirror as I came up. The truth was that sometimes I felt nothing. I did the coke and told myself that I was high, but I was just numb. That's why I looked in the mirror. When I was really flying, I couldn't stop searching for my eyes in any reflection. I thought I was beautiful. I thought my eyes had secrets. That night, I looked plain. I picked my eyelashes in the mirror, and I saw Will staring at me, his eyes bulging out.
"Are you okay? Do you need air?" "I'm in love with you."
The words smashed together when he said it, but it was one of those unmistakable phrases. It was built that way so you could never take it back.
"Excuse me? I'm in love. God, no, never mind. Don't say it again."
He put his hand over his mouth and fell backward, hitting the toilet handle. It flushed profoundly.
"Don't be stupid, Will."
My voice sounded angry. I looked in the mirror and my eyes were vibrating.
"You're a fucking nightmare talking like that."
"I'm sorry,"
he said, his head wilted on his neck. "Don't be sorry," I said. Of course, tomorrow I would pretend like nothing had happened. Jake had taught me about that. I would be kind. But as I hit him on the back, I realized I was actually angry. "Don't be sorry, just don't be stupid, okay?" I guided him out and dropped him on the bench near the door. He sat calmly, swiveling his head around as if he had just woken up. I sat on a bar stool next to Ariel and concentrated on my fingernails kneading into the wood on the bar.
"Did you ever read Juna? I forget," she said, totally coherent, chewing on a cherry stem.
"Yes."
"I gave Nightwood to Vivi. I'm trying to get her to read more."
"That's good." There was a tequila shot in front of me, and I took it.
"That should fuck her up for a minute."
Ariel smiled.
"You finished the bag, huh?"
A stethoscope on the bar. A cape hanging on a stool. Costumes wearing away, then finally discarded as we approached another harsh morning. I listened to everyone, peeling back the black paint from the bar in strips. I could do it if I wanted to.
That's what I was thinking. I could talk about Billy Wilder and Juna Barnes and the new bone marrow dish at the gastropub in the West Village and whether you knew so-and-so from that university. Oh, it's just a little school called fucking Harvard. And isn't it sad how the city is changing? Every day for the worse. And of course, radicalism is the only vehicle for change. And, oh yes, revolution is intrinsically violent. But what is violence anyway? It all boils down to pheromones. We are just chemical mixtures. But when you meet that person, you just know, you know? Fake, I yelled. No one looked at me. Maybe I hadn't said it out loud. We're all just waiting around to become real people. Well, guess what, Vivian? We're not. Remember the phonies? She nodded, her face like a sequin. You don't remember. You need to read more. Fuck you, I said to a man I didn't recognize. You want to repeat the names of things? You want to make out? That person disappeared. I serve people, I yelled out above the music. Sasha, you think my life is easy because I'm pretty? It's not. I get a fucking door open for me now and then. Being pretty, well, I want to fucking record this shit right now. It sucks. Baby monster, how about you shut your face before I break your face? I hate you, I said to Will, but he was asleep on coats. Maybe it was that he'd said it in the bathroom. Was that me now? The Park Bar bathroom with its one dreary bulb and scratched out mirror, scummy faucet, and STD-infected walls? A bathroom where I ran the water and threw up on countless occasions? Love? But it was Jake, really. Will and Jake were friends. Or friendly. As much as Jake could be friends with anyone. They drank together, acted like old comrades, had their safe subjects to chat about, rare Dylan recordings and Vietnam War trivia. But Will gossiped like a teenager. Everyone at the restaurant did. It was entirely possible, likely even, that Jake and Will had discussed this love, a word now irreparably tied to the Park Bar bathroom. Perhaps Jake had told Will to express his feelings. Perhaps Jake had told him I wasn't worth it. What Jake certainly hadn't said was, "Stop. I like her." "Ari!" I yelled. She turned away from her conversation. I shot back more tequila and reached behind the bar for the bottle. I heard glass shattering as I pulled it up. "Look, skulls," I pointed to the bottle. "It's spooky, get it? Death." Ariel pinched me hard on the underarm, but didn't yell at me. "What's wrong with you?" "Can we share a cab home? I'm about to be really drunk." I shut my eyes and she patted my head. "Sure, Skip, whatever you want." I picked my head up and looked toward the door. Just leave, I thought. It was bitterly cold that night, and the wind knocked on the sealed windows. Instead of my reflection, there was a spiteful, sparkling face floating in the dark window, looking at me with a tightened jaw, judging. The park became threadbare as the vendors thinned out at the Green Market. The farmers made bets on the first frost. The windows in my room were always shut, old t-shirts stuffed into the cracks. I tapped at a decrepit, cold radiator, watched it like an oracle. But what really signaled the change in the seasons was that the bugs moved inside. The fruit flies first. They hovered around the lids of the liquors at the bar, around the sink drains. Fruit flies dispersing when you picked up a damp rag. A spray of black specks on the cream-colored walls. Zoe addressed it at pre-shift and assigned everyone extra side work. "Fruit flies are an emergency," she said and struck her fist forward for emphasis. That was what had me with yellow gloves on up to my elbows, holding a roll of paper towels and a nameless spray bottle of blue. I shuffled toward Nikki and the bar sink.
You look great, Fluff. Now, down on your hands and knees.
I don't understand, I said. But what I meant was, why me?
You're a woman. I thought cleaning was intuitive.
He poured the watery remains of a cocktail into a glass and handed it to me. Liquid courage.
What's under there?
I took the drink down.
You think I know? The last time I cleaned under that sink was in the late 80s.
I sighed and knelt. As I descended, the air changed. Dank, uncirculated, a whiff of citrus. I peeked under the sink. It was dark.
I can't see anything.
Nikki handed me a flashlight. A drain is made of two drains, Zoe told me. The first was in the sink. The second was in the floor. There was a gap between them. The air gap was called a stop gap, I found out later. It prevented water, sewage, anything from the pipes, from backing up directly into the sink. I pointed the light and saw pens, wine corks, foil, scraps of paper, forks, coins. I swung the light, looking for the floor drain. When I found it, I gasped and clicked the light off. Nikki was leaning on the bar, looking at me.
What'd you find?
Nick, this is bad.
His behind yous became demonic. The best case scenario was that it was the start of his shift, late afternoon, and he was still groggy, grumpy, avoiding eye contact. I could pretend to ignore him. It was worse if he was caffeinated. If he had been sipping on the Cremant, if his appetite had awoken.
Behind you, Jake said. I froze at the back bar where I was dusting the aperitif bottles. Feather duster on Sue's. Eyes on Lillet. Tributaries of dust sparkling beneath the hanging lamps. First his shoulder, then the indolent expanse of his chest. His thumb grazed my elbow. I held my breath until the whole thing was over.
Behind you, he said.
I froze at the pass, where I had been stacking clean quart containers. It was a narrow passage. The butane flames clicked in front of me. Behind, the staccato hits of knives on plastic cutting boards. My arm was raised, and I collected it to my side and waited. He placed his hand on my lower hip, or my upper thigh, or along the bottom seam of my underwear. He pushed me, moved me, and caught my hip with his other hand. Anyone else would have allowed me to move. Anyone else would have waited. He scraped roughly by.
Excuse me, he said. I did not have the weapons to fight back.
Don't strangle the bottle, my love, Simone said. She sat at an empty table in the mezz, her hair unfastened, the remains of a burgundy in a glass in front of her, a gift from one of her tables. I had helped her finish her side work, and now I opened wine while she watched. I relaxed my grip. You're twisting the label away. Keep it toward me.
I'm not turning it.
In Sicily, you're cursing a person when you hold the wine with the label turned away from them. Stop staring at it. Look at me.
It's not that turned. It's better than before.
I don't care about better than before. I care about correct. I grabbed a new bottle. I took the knife of my wine key and ran it around the lip.
I can't wait until everything is a screw top.
Bite your tongue. You're twisting it again. how do I get the knife all the way around without twisting it? She took the bottle from me and demonstrated, swiping the knife clockwise, then flipping her wrist open, the knife going from inside to out and finishing the cut. The foil top popped off. She grabbed another bottle of the Bourgogne Cabernet Franc. We had a bottle of each of the house wines, so I could really practice. Why do you know so much? I've been doing this a long time. No, everyone here has been doing this a long time. You know what I mean. I find it impossible to do anything without investing in it, even server work. This job was supposed to be easy. All jobs are easy for people averse to using their brains. I'm in a slight but stately minority who believes that dining is an art, just like life. I had made the cut. The foil cap came off in one perfect piece. I looked at her expectantly. "Again," was all she said. But it's not just that this job is hard. Most mornings I wake up thinking, I need an adult. That's you. You're the adult. No, you're my adult, I said, and she smiled. I don't know. I haven't done laundry since I moved here. I'm not lying. That can happen in the beginning. Drop it off, pick it up. I used to work out, run at least. That happens too. Join a gym. I never go to the bank. I lose all my cash tips. That's just park bar, little one. Balance, she said, gesturing toward the bottle I held almost horizontally. I leveled it. Floated it, as she said, in midair. You could talk to Howard. Excuse me? You can schedule a one-on-one with Howard. All the managers have mandatory meetings, but Howard opens it up to the servers as well. You can review your progress, or just vent about work. Ask him life questions. I looked at her, trying to see what she meant. I felt like I was standing at the edge of something, or maybe back against something, and I remembered what Will had said about Simone and Howard. I thought of that anorexic hostess, Rebecca. I couldn't even remember her face. All I recalled was her name on the schedule. That's a little weird, right? Besides, that's why I have you. I'm serious. He could advise you in ways I can't. Why can't it be you? I put the bottle down. I don't want to talk to him. I see how hard it is for you to open up to people, but Howard is someone that could help you. Help me what? Get all my friends in trouble? Have a nervous breakdown and move back home? Get transferred to another restaurant? Howard wasn't so terrible. But his indifference with Rebecca, the way he erased her, upset me. And it felt like Simone was sending me away. Oh, she said. She cooled considerably. I wouldn't go in for gossip. He has mentored a lot of girls like you. Girls like me? I looked at my hand, where a cut on my index finger had reopened. Young women, I'm sorry. Young women like you who have moved to the city and... She waved her hand in the air. And what? It came out loudly. Will looked up from the dining room below, and I waved. And what? Listen, I will set it up for you. You can talk to him while I'm gone. I don't want to, Simone, I said. My tone changed, and I saw it affect her. I was telling her I wouldn't. She touched her hair. Of course, she said. Well, you will need to continue working on your form for wine service. May I at least ask that you practice that?
You're going somewhere?
Had she said that?
They let Simone leave the restaurant?
Yes, it's that time.
What time?
Little one, it's nearly Thanksgiving. Jake and I are going home.
Jake and I disappear.
Jake kissed me. I heard myself say, like a stranger was telling on me. I had been so restrained. Of course, I wanted to tell her immediately. I wanted to see if she already knew. But it was like the figs, the oysters. More than anything, I wanted to accumulate moments between us. Just Jake and me.
Yes, he did.
She regarded me with a passive reception to my words. I couldn't find any causes for the cloud of tension that had grown during the lesson, but there it was, coloring the room.
I don't know, I said.
Shut the fuck up, I told myself.
I don't know what it means.
Simone sighed. She was silent a long time looking at me.
What do you think it means?
I shrugged. Anything I thought of to say out loud would be juvenile when it landed in front of her.
A woman needs to be in her right mind to be kissed. I tell him that all the time. Otherwise, all hell breaks loose.
People hear what they want to hear. I heard. I tell him that all the time. All the time. All the time. Jake and I. My finger was bleeding, and I put it in my mouth.
Have a great trip, then,
I said. I gripped the rails and started down the stairs.
Enjoy the holiday, she replied when I was halfway down.
Let me try to say it again. Sometimes, when he spoke to you, he mumbled. You had to lean in to hear what he was saying. He repeated himself often. We were drinking the last quarters of open bottles of Cabernet Franc, and Jake poured them over ice cubes, and it tasted like thyme and cranberries. And I said, "When do you head home for Thanksgiving?" And he said, "Soon." I leaned in and said, "When?" He turned, lined me up in his sights, and said, "Soon." I said, nearly falling off my stool, "When? We should hang out before you go." And his arctic eyes said to me, "Babe, I've already gone." I was polishing knives at the front hutch when I heard my name. It sliced me. My name that I hadn't heard in months. Suddenly, I saw the version of myself who had never come to the city, never fallen down the stairs, or said anything stupid. She was safe and as good as dead. It was a kid I had gone to college with. I couldn't remember his name. He was in a suit. They always wore a suit when they came in with their parents. Or at least a sports jacket and tie. My instinct was to run into the kitchen and pretend I hadn't heard. But I thought Simone might be watching. I smiled warmly.
"You work here?"
he asked, incredulous.
"Yes, yes I do."
I tried to see my new self. All I could see was the red and white stripes of my shirt. Why did I wear the red one, which always reminded me of Waldo and clowns? I split and watched us from the top of the stairs. I split and watched us from the ceiling. I split and watched us from halfway across the country.
"That's so funny," he said.
"Yeah, it's hilarious."
"Do you live here?"
"Not in the restaurant."
"Ha, yeah. That's so cool you moved here. You live in the city?"
"In Williamsburg. It's a neighborhood, in Brooklyn.
Oh, I've heard of it. It's like the hip spot, right?
Not the part I live in, I thought. But I knew what I was supposed to say.
Yes, lots of... The words wouldn't come together. Artists, very up and coming.
What else are you doing?
Inevitable. Why hadn't I practiced this situation? Was it possible that I had ferociously recited menu ingredients to myself on the subway, but had never come up with a tagline about my life? Had I completely erased the world outside these walls? What else am I doing? I am learning about food and wine and how to taste terroir and how to pay attention. I'm doing this, I said. I paused. His expectation hung on me.
And I'm working on some projects.
What kind of projects?
Jesus, his curiosity was baffling. Other industry people knew when to let it go. They understood the subtext.
Mixed media stuff. You know, all the different mediums. Fragments, the human condition, the failure of language, love. I'm at the gathering stage right now.
Fascinating, he said, smothering me with his earnestness.
This must be the perfect place to gather material.
I wanted to say, my life is full. I chose this life because it's a constant assault of color and taste and light, and it's raw and ugly and fast, and it's mine. And you'll never understand. Until you live it, you don't know. Instead, I nodded and said,
yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, that's great.
When he said great, it sounded like sad. I steeled myself. The only way out of this was hospitality.
Are you dining with us?
Yeah, I'm in the back with my dad and uncle. I was just looking for the bathroom. We're in from Philly for the afternoon. This place is his favorite. It's really famous, you know that?
I smiled. Well, I'll come say hello, and I will let Chef know you're here. Please, let me show you the restrooms. I walked him over, and he seemed to understand that it was time for me to return to my glamorous life as an artist who was accidentally polishing knives in a stripy pirate's blouse. He started to leave, but turned back and said,
hey, do you think you could be our waitress? That would be so fun.
So fun. If only I knew how to tell him I wasn't even a fucking waitress.
I never would have recognized him.
I didn't belong to his world anymore. We called them the 9-to-5ers. They lived in accordance with nature, waking and sleeping with the cycle of the sun. Mealtimes, business hours, the world conformed to their schedule. The best markets, the A-list concerts, the street fairs, the banner festivities were on Saturdays and Sundays. They sold out movies, art openings, ceramics classes. They watched television shows in real time. They had evenings to waste. They watched the Super Bowl. They watched the Oscars. They made reservations for dinner because they ate dinner at the normal time. They brunched ruthlessly and read the Sunday Times on Sundays. They moved in crowds that reinforced their citizenship. Crowded museums, crowded subways, crowded bars. The city teeming with extras for the movie they starred in. They were dining, shopping, consuming, unwinding, expanding, while we were working, diminishing, being absorbed into their scenery. That is why we, the industry people, got so greedy when the 9-to-5ers went to bed.
Yeah, you in the merge now, said Sasha.
He had watched the whole interaction with unconcealed delight.
What? You think you like your friends? You never be like them again, honey pie. Look at you.
You think you dip your toe in the pool?
No, bitch. You in the pool. You drowning in the pool.
I'm in the marge.
Yeah. Like, you in the marge with the fetties and the fags and the freaks and that guy that sleeps on the bench.
You mean I'm in the margins of society?
Yeah, what you think I fucking mean? Well, whatsoever. You an old hag now, just like me.
I saw him that night at Park Bar. When I looked at the schedule, I saw that they were both off for the next 2 weeks. Flower Girl was there in a turtleneck dress and tights and riding boots, looking fresh from some polo match. But otherwise, it was just us. Everyone else was filmed in oil and dust. I ignored him, bowed against the wall, talking to Will. I went to join Ariel and Vivian at the bar, and as soon as I sat, I felt it. He was gone. Every beautiful animal knows when it's being hunted. I sat down next to Terry. It wasn't busy enough for two bartenders. Ariel and Vivian were bickering, so I turned to him. He was drunk. He leaned into me, winking. His voice as fuzzy as a stretched-out cotton sweater.
Hey, new girl. You know the straw that broke the camel's back? Is that the same thing as the last straw?
He touched his fingers to mine. I don't know if he meant to. I put my hands in my lap. My beer was flat, but I knew I would drink all of it.
Absolutely. It's absolutely the same straw.
He nodded, impressed that I knew.
Not being able to swipe into the subway when people are backing up behind you.
Waiting for him at the bar. Leaving your purse open on a stool with a mess of bills visible. Mispronouncing the names while presenting French wines. Your clogs slipping on the waxed floors. The way your arms shoot out and you tense your face when you almost fall. Taking your job seriously.
Watching the sex scene from Dirty Dancing on repeat and eating a box of ginger snaps for dinner on your day off.
Forgetting your stripes, your work pants, your socks. Mentally mapping the bar for corners where you might catch him alone. Getting drunker faster than everyone else. Not knowing what foie gras is. Not knowing what you think about abortion. Not knowing what a feminist is. Not knowing who the mayor is. Throwing up between your feet on the subway stairs. On a Tuesday. Going back for thirds at family meal. Excruciating diarrhea in the employee bathroom. Hurting yourself when you hit your head on the low pipe. Refusing to leave the bar though it's over. Completely over. Bleeding in every form. Beer stains on your shirt. Grease stains on your jeans. Stains in every form. Saying you know where something is when you have absolutely no idea where it is. At some point I leveled out. Everything stopped being embarrassing. Winter. 1. You will kiss the wrong boy. It was an easy prophecy. They were all the wrong boy. The night before Thanksgiving was a drinking holiday you didn't know about until you moved to the city. The streets in the village were clogged with people. Server people, the shops closed, orange and yellow papered windows darkened. No one had anywhere to go. A celebration ensued. Mildly destructive, mildly bored. It was a night of driftings and nowheres. You threw up and kept drinking. Pulled the trigger and doused the trigger. Throwing up was effortless. Like nothing. Kissing like nothing. Your head full, then emptied. Ready to be kissed. You were on Will's lap, staring at his buttery lashes. You knew you shouldn't be, but his arms enclosed you while he told you about the latest movie script he had written. He modeled the superhero after you. You, in red patent leather boots. You, able to jump buildings and shoot lightning out of your eyes. Sunrise came like an undisclosed verdict. The wind was salient, persistent, and you shivered. You were blown out on cocaine, sitting on a rooftop, and he tasted like a malt shop. Every time you pulled away, his eyes were welling like puddles in his face. You opened a beer warmer than the air, spilled your beer on your shirt. The sky rushing up now, anxious, and you knew you were doing something wrong. You kissed him harder, and the sky abated. When you had sex, you were totally dry, and it felt like scratching. For 1 second, every face you'd ever seen, you forgot. Pigeons flew in diminishing waves between the low buildings. The sun rose. It said, "Now that you've done this, you can never have that. Now that I'm like this, I can never go back." The first time I came into work really hungover, ill hungover. My shoes were gone. It had a muddled logic that I accepted. When I woke with my head rattling, I knew that every step of my day would be harder than normal. It was the day after Thanksgiving. I was the 3 p.m. back waiter, but the trains were running irregularly. And while I had heard one sighing into the station as I ran down the stairs, my card was out of money, which is to say, I was late. I had seen the sun come up, 2 mornings in a row, actually. I had watched in real time as the night weakened and the authoritative blue of morning, flat as a sheet, hung itself in the east. There are many romantic reasons to watch the sunrise. Once it started, it was hard to leave. I wanted to own it. I wanted it to be a confirmation that I was alive. Most of the time, however, it felt condemning. The door to the locker room opened, but I didn't look up. I was on my hands and knees looking for my clogs. Server clogs were indestructible with utilitarian ugliness. They were built for labor, for standing on tile for 14 hours. They were not cheap. "You're late," he said. I turned to Will, and he looked as sick as I felt, or maybe it was the bleak light in the locker room. "Will, I can't talk. I can't find my shoes."
I can't.
"Please?"
"When in your life did you get so good at disappearing?"
"Well, the sun was up. I had been saying I needed to leave for hours."
"You said you were going to the bathroom."
"I meant the bathroom in my apartment."
"You seemed like you were having a nice time."
"Please, let's not talk about this."
"I was having a nice time."
"Yes."
"It's funny, because you laugh like a little girl 1 second.
Will, stop.
Is your phone broken?"
I started opening every unlocked locker.
"I texted you yesterday. We had a big dinner with turkey and all the stuff."
"I was busy." I had spent Thanksgiving Day napping, masturbating, ignoring phone calls from distant relatives who probably didn't even know I had moved, and watching all 3 Godfathers. I had pad thai for dinner. As a gesture of holiday goodwill, they turned on the heat in my building. Every 10 minutes, the radiator sounded off like a firecracker, and within an hour, I had to open all the windows. My roommate had invited me to his mom's house in Armonk. It was a pitiful moment, in that he pitied me enough to invite me, and I pitied him for having familial obligations. I probably would have been a nice buffer, and we could have had a real conversation for the first time. But the parade of it, the shallow, ancient family dramas, the hours of being polite. I waved him off happily. Scott texted me that the cooks were going out in Williamsburg. It was already 10 p.m., but he promised to pay for a car home if I came. So I brushed my hair. They were raging when I got there, drinking whiskey hard, like taking bullets to the throat. I couldn't keep up. I kept up. Scott ladled me into a car at 7 a.m. "My shoes are gone," I said, incredulous.
"Maybe we can grab a beer tonight. Take it easy."
"I'm not drinking again, ever."
"You just need hair of the dog. Ask Jake to slip you something. Or wait, he's gone."
"Lovely," I said under my breath. Will squatted next to me as I looked in the dark space under the lockers. I wanted to hit him. "You did this to yourself," I said, my eyelids twitching.
"But you did have a nice time the other night."
I didn't answer. Was I going to get written up for being late? I had worn my Converse to work. There was no way I could wear them on the floor. Ariel and Heather were both on the schedule later, so I couldn't steal their shoes, and Simone's were too big for me. "I wore them literally 2 days ago," I said. "I wore them, I put them in the corner, under the coats."
"But that's not where they go, doll. They go in your locker."
"But they make everything in my locker dirty." My teeth hurt. Something in my back felt broken. "I usually put them by the coats."
"You went out with the cooks last night?"
"How do you know that?"
"Scott told me you were wasted. He said you fell down in the middle of a crosswalk."
"He was wasted," I said. I didn't know if that had happened. It might have happened. When Will said his name, I faintly remembered making out with Scott and felt injured.
"You're cute when you're hungover."
I took a deep breath. "Well, I am very sorry for any misinformation. I mean, misleading. I mean, I'm sorry if you have ideas. It's been a very tipsy week."
"What does that mean?"
"It means I don't quite feel I'm in control of my life. I've been hitting it a little hard, you know?"
"Okay,"
he said. He thought about it.
"You can lean on me."
"No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm sorry if I did anything."
"Sorry you did what? Which part?"
Will thought we were flirting. I didn't know when exactly my guard had lowered with him. It had been high since his confession in the park bar bathroom, but it had been whittled away by time, cocaine, and beer. And work had been lusterless since they left. "I don't even know, Will. I don't remember a thing."
"Ah,"
he said. He stood up.
"Chef threw them out."
"What?"
"Yesterday. Every year, whatever is left out over the holiday gets thrown out. There's a note on the bulletin board. Check the trash cans in the alley. Maybe the garbage hasn't been picked up yet."
I stared at him as he left.
"Sorry," he said. "You should have told the maid."
And there they were. 3 bags into my search, with curdled milk and clotted food and disintegrating paper towels. The floor drain under the sink was the fountainhead. Decomposing fruit, crusts of bread, wine dregs, and general backwash congealed to an opaque gray slime. It seemed ridiculous that we didn't know about it sooner, as water barely passed through it. This slime, this primordial sludge, was the home base for all sorts of insects that weren't allowed in the restaurant, namely the fruit flies. They weren't so menacing in and of themselves, but they had a disturbing blind tenacity when they landed. They moved away in thick clusters when you swatted them, and then settled again in the exact same spot. I had nightmares about them landing in my hair, covering my face. I told Zoe the first time. She nodded, and nothing happened. Then it was my turn again for the drainside work, and I marched up to the office where she was picking at a filet mignon of tuna. Zoe, I can't clean that drain.
What drain? She asked.
The drain. The one I told you about. The disgusting one where the fruit flies live.
You never told me that.
Yes, I did. It was like weeks ago. No one said anything to me. She stood up, annoyed, and straightened her blazer. We can't solve problems if we don't work together. I need you to perform your side work and inform management if you're not able to. Never once had I thought of her as a real authority figure. She was Howard and Simone's puppet, the poor desk slave who made sure the drop was correct and had to arrange the server schedule every week, which meant everyone hated her. I'm very sorry, but I did inform management. You can't pay me enough to touch that. I laid the yellow gloves down. You should see it for yourself. Maybe it was because Simone was gone, or maybe I was worn a little thin. I thought for a second she would write me up. But she shrugged her shoulders and shook them, like she was warming her body up. She picked up the yellow gloves. The bar sink? When we got downstairs, Nikki was rinsing down and wiping out the speed rack, one of the last steps of closing. He saw Zoe's gloves and said, I wouldn't disturb them. Can this wait 5 minutes? No, I've been informed of a serious situation. Yeah, like a month ago, Zoe. Enough. She put a hand up. She went behind the bar and grabbed a flashlight and a fork. I don't know what the fork was for. Protection? She sank down, and 2 seconds later, she screamed, covering her face. They soared up in a cloud, and I sprinted back into the kitchen. Some nights, if Terry was feeling particularly loose, he let Ariel put on her music while we cut lines on the bar and helped him put up the stools. Did I tell you the one about polar bears? He asked. I finished my line and passed him my cut-up pen. Yes, the canned peas. Shit, you need to get a new bar.
You need to get new jokes, old man.
He passed it to Sasha. Ariel stood looking out the windows, her body tense. Vivian was supposed to meet us 2 hours ago. I wiped my nose. Every muscle in my body clenched, then released, and my legs gave out. I sank, and then sat on the floor.
Whoa, I said. It's strong. Who gonna take care of baby monster tonight? Not me. I have a date in 20 minutes.
You have a date at 4 a.m.? Terry asked.
I say to him, 4:15, Sasha said, checking the clock. You think too early-ish?
Terry, can we get one more?
Ariel asked, her eyeliner made black notches in her face.
Ari, come on, I'm all cleaned up.
I'll make it, I'll clean it, come on, Skip here is stripping her face off. We all need to wind down.
Terry looked toward the street, and he and Ariel exchanged a loaded glance.
I'm not tripping my face off, I'm cool, I said from the floor.
My palms were sweating, and it was delicious, running them on the cold, gritty tile.
Negronis! Ariel demanded, pushing behind the bar. Wait, you guys, wait! Show me!
I bolted up. I pulled down a stool, and it felt so light.
The lesson is thirds,
she said as she poured Campari into a jigger. She locked her eyes on me and said in a low voice,
And of course, it is a lesson of life as well.
They started laughing.
Stop, guys. Don't make fun of her. Thirds is an important lesson, like a cappuccino, I said. I mean, ideally, the perfect cappuccino, it's one-third espresso, one-third milk, one-third foam. But I mean, ideally, you want the foam and the milk to be perfectly integrated. Aerated, actually.
There she is, said Will. He pulled down a stool and sat next to me, and I hugged him generously, an overflow of the love I had burrowed within me and needed the drugs to interpret.
Now she got diarrhea in her mouth, Sasha said.